Missing this?
I remember Ollie texted me Solskjaer. One or two people would get hold of my number, unfortunately, and he would text me.
Then get this, the all-new OTB Sports app. Off the Ball, Ireland's premier sports channel, now has a new home, featuring the biggest names in Irish and world sports. Podcasts, interviews, news, commentary, analysis, plus almost 20 years of sporting archives. All free and ready when you are, at home or on the go. The new OTB Sports app. Download it now from the App Store and Google Play.
The OTB Podcast Network.
So as discussed before the ad break, Bryson DeChambeau now up to 10th in the world. Last night shot a final round 65 to win the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. This has been coming. He arrived to Detroit with six consecutive top tens. And more to the point, he has been the talk of the golfing world of late. DeChambeau averaged 350 yards off the tee all week, which is a record in the sport of golf. And for the season, he's averaging 320 yards off the tee, which puts him first in driving distance. And in part, this is on the back of serious weight gain, 3 stone in the last 9 months. For more, Paul McGinley joins us, former Ryder Cup player and captain now with Sky Sports. Paul, thanks for the time.
Hi, Joe. Evening.
When was the last time you knocked it out 350 yards?
In two shots. I never had the pleasure of doing that, unfortunately. But man, that was some exhibition, wasn't it? It's some exhibition, the four tournaments he's played so far this year. It really is.
It's been gripping to watch. You can't look away when he's hitting. And he's played a number of tight courses as well over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And he has managed to navigate his way around and hit some ridiculous drives. A quote from Rory at Heritage. He was playing with him on the Sunday. And McIlroy obviously can hit the ball a fair distance himself. He said, DeChambeau hit a couple of drives on Sunday that Harry and I were just looking at each other and we were like, holy shit, that was unbelievable. He hit one into the wind on 11. I hit a really good drive, probably hit it 315, 320. He must have flown my ball by 40 yards. He hit it like 370, 375 into the wind. It was crazy. It was nuts. It's unbelievable. So he's broken the record here, which was previously held by Tiger Woods on a links course, the 05 championship.
That's right.
Which, you know, links ball will run and run and run if you find the fairway. 350 yards average all week. I just can't believe we're here. I mean, it's been coming, but we're here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody is really that surprised inside the game, Joe. As you say, it has been coming. I mean, Rory's up there. I think he was the longest player on the tour last year at 325-odd yards, or 320 yards he averages out at. And Bryson has just taken to another level. I like this guy, Joe, I have to say. There's a lot of people very quick to be critical of him. I think he brings so much comment into the game. And, you know, a game that can be accused of so many players that are very stereotypical and hiding behind their brand names and hiding behind their managers and all of those things. And this guy is kind of, he's reinvented a lot of things about the game. I mean, for example, I mean, everybody said he was crazy. Nowhere in the history of the game had anybody used shafts all the same length. Mm. He's done it. Not long that, he became very successful doing it. Now he's moved on to this distance thing and putting a half on 2.5 stone in such a short space of time, mostly muscle, in order to gain more yardage. And straight away hitting the ground running with success, Joe. I mean, this guy is bringing a lot of comment into the game. And I think that's a welcome, certainly for somebody who's in the game, it's a certainly welcome addition.
Because for a long time, messing with your weight was, you know, seen in golf as a really risky thing to do.
Yeah, and a lot of players have fallen foul of that. You know, Nick Faldo got the number one player in the world and major winners and bulked up one winter and came back and played. He played like a dog for 6 months after that and lost all the weight again. Tiger Woods has been down that road. You know, he feels he plays his best when he's a bit wiry and a bit sinewy. So this is quite incredible that this guy has bulked up the way he has. But, you know, there is questions. I spoke to a few people who are in the fitness game, particularly regarding training golfers, and there are a lot of questions from a sports science point of view about how sustainable this is. But you know what, Joe, if he gets 5 or 10 years out of this and continues on this trajectory of improvement and knocks off a number of major wins, I think his legacy will be pretty assured.
As in, the worry is that his body will break down.
Yeah, that's what they're telling me. You know, to put on that much muscle and to create that much speed, not just when you're playing tournaments, but all the practicing you have to do and the continuous weights that he has to do in the gym. The question is, has he got the foundation in his body to be able to sustain this over a period of time?
Because it's not a very fluid swing. It's abrupt and it's jarring and it looks violent.
Yeah. Exactly, and that's the point. You know, is there enough stability? And you know, it's not just about putting on and having big, strong forearms. You know, you've got to have the stability, the smaller muscles right in, all the sinews and all the kind of things that sports people talk about inside your body. You know, they have to be strong as well as the big, muscly ones that are seen on the outside. So there is a lot of question mark about that, but certainly he has... he's ruffled a few feathers. He's shaken the branches of trees, and even sports science people are questioning what they used to talk about. So this is all great, as I say, for the game, and I think it's a very welcome addition. And this narrative, although it's not something I like in terms of big hitting overpowering, it's become so important in the professional game. I think it's, you know, it's good for the game of golf that everybody's talking about it.
He's 26 years of age, but, you know, because people may not be totally au fait with him. 26 years of age, from California. He's 6'1". Like, he has always been good. I think it would be wrong for us to suddenly give the impression that he wasn't very good pre the weight gain. He turned pro in 2016. He already has... This is his sixth PGA Tour win. He's won 4 years in a row now. He won three times in 2018 when he wasn't driving at this distance. So we're talking about an excellent player already. There was a quote from a teacher of his at college, or a part of the golf academy there, who said that, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, he'll either end up being world number one or he'll be in a straitjacket. And he is, you know, an odd personality. As you said, came on tour, clubs all the same length. Like, that is just a ballsy thing to do. He puts all his golf balls in Epsom salts to make sure they're manufactured properly. Criticised badly last year for very slow play. And then, you know, went off and did this weight gain thing. Like, the point I'm making is he doesn't do anything without doing research, and clearly looked into this weight situation and felt it was the right thing to do, and has been vindicated to a stunning effect. But here's what I don't fully understand, though. If I go and put on 2-3 stone, and not all of it in Bryson's case is muscle, by the way, but if I go on and put on that kind of weight, like, it's not like he's so much heavier than everybody else on tour. How is he hitting the ball still so far? I know his driver is 5 degrees. Is there something in his swing, or how he, like, it's not just weight.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I've done a lot of research on and talked to a lot of people, the real experts in it. I mean, I know a little bit, but the real experts on it. And I spoke to the head club fitter in TaylorMade today to get a kind of lowdown from him exactly what is going on. And basically, it's a combination, just getting technical for a moment, yeah, with the answer here, Joe. The bottom line is, when a driver hits a golf ball in the modern game, the face bends. And then you immediately have a spring effect coming off the face. So if you are fortunate to have a lot of clubhead speed, like, say, a Rory McIlroy or a Brooks Koepka or a Dustin Johnson or a Bryson DeChambeau now, you are going to quantifiably get a bigger spring off it than Joe Molloy is going to get, who can't create that kind of speed. Mm. That's why technology is really helping these guys that have speed. So your question was quite right there in what you said, that he's following the data. He's using science to follow the data. And the data said last year, Joe, there's an interesting stat I did in my research last winter. The leading 100 players in the world rankings as of 1st of January this year, only one of those was ranked in the top 100 in driving accuracy on the PGA Tour. Mm. Right? So basically, it's not that important to hit the ball that straight anymore, but it's really important to hit it a long way. Mm. So what he has done is he said, right, I'm going to go and find a way of hitting the ball further. So first of all, he's got to create a clubhead speed. So that's what he's done. And all the work that he's been doing in the speed, doing in the gym, it's not just about building muscles. It's also about creating speed. Everything is based on creating speed. And the more strength you have in your body, the more of a foundation that you have, and more of a sturdiness in your body, the more you can rotate around your body. And that's where you get the speed from. So once he gets the speed, then you go back into the science again and you go to the club fitters and you say, right, the ideal launch conditions. You know, when I was a boy going out to Portmarnock watching the pros play in the Royal Dublin in the Irish Opens, there used to be what we call the aeroplane shot. The ball would take off really low, the old ladder ball, and then rise up through the wind. Mm. That's not the flight anymore the players are looking for. They're looking for high launch, low spin, which is kind of a rainbow effect. That's the kind of ideal flight to maximize out distance. So with this added speed that he has, now he has to try to get the ideal launch conditions. And that's what he's done. He's took a lot of loft off. He's down to 5 degrees loft. And he's hitting about 5 degrees up up on the ball through it as well. So he's gaining back that launch by hitting up through the ball, and hence he's creating 10 degrees of a dynamic loft, as they call it, through the ball. That's why the ball is going up in the air with not a lot of spin. And of course, he's getting a huge bounce, trampoline effect off the face, because he's bending the face so much more. So technically, sorry for going into that, but
no, that's
the reason why...
That's the reason why he's able to do it. No, that's fascinating, because too many people have said, oh, put on 2-3 stone and you can hit it like DeChambeau. And that's not the case. It's too technical and there's too much technology. So you've explained that brilliantly. And to further your point, so I mentioned he's number one on tour for distance. He's 112th for drive and accuracy. So the next question then is, how does the game combat this or treat this? And at the moment... And DeChambeau has figured it, and a lot of players have, bomb and gouge. You can, you know, get it up there as far as you can and gouge it onto the green with a wedge if you miss the fairway. And, you know, he quipped at the start of the week to Donald Ross, the architect, sorry, Donald, but I'm going to bomb it by all your bunkers. You know,
and he did.
Traditionalists are spinning in their grave. So what does the game do here now? I mean... Are we now at the point where it's either 8,000-yard golf courses, or they change the rough, or will they change the ball? Can they do something about the technology legally?
Well, the horse is bolted to a large extent, Joe. There's been a huge, for the first time ever, despite everybody from Jack Nicklaus to Tiger Woods to Tom Watson, Gary Player, down through the last 5 and 7 years, all telling the governing bodies, the USGA in America and the RNA over here, listen, you've lost control of golf club manufacturing as well as golf balls. You got to do something about it. They didn't listen, nothing. It's now a runaway train. They finally come out after this huge survey that they commissioned at the start of this year and said, yes, you know what? We have the club technology has gone too far, and it's absolutely on the max at the moment, and we are going to do something about it. Whether that's going to be reining it in, they haven't said yet. All they've said is, yes, this is a line in the sand. And that's the first time they've ever admitted it. Despite everybody in the game telling them, it's the first time they've actually said, yes, we do have a problem. So it's a runaway train at the moment. Mm. What are they going to do about it? Well, the question is... of course, money comes into it like it comes into everything. You know, if you're Titleist or TaylorMade or Callaway, who has spent hundreds of millions of dollars on all the research and development of these golf clubs and golf balls, applying to the rules, and all of a sudden the rules are changed, you know, are you in a position then to legally challenge that? Mm. That may well be the case. They've got to navigate their way through that if they do change the ball and change the club. Personally, for me, what I would like to see more of is better course setup, Joe. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about Rory's comment. What I think the most impressive performance for him so far, considering the distance he's hit the ball from Bryson this year, has been in Hilton Head, because that's a very, very narrow golf course. I've played that tournament a few times. It's incredibly narrow. Mm. It's as narrow a golf course as I've ever played. So able to navigate his way around that was very impressive to a top 10 finish. So I think course setups can really help. But again, let's move away a little bit from that and look at a bigger picture here. The PGA Tour, who run golf in America, the tournaments in America, they're in, as they say themselves, in the entertainment business. And if you look at the top of the world rankings, all the superstars, Rory, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Bryson DeChambeau, wherever you want to go in the top 10, one big hitter after another big hitter. And really the PGA Tour, being in entertainment business, they want these guys to excel. So what they do is they create golf courses. They're not going to penalize these guys too much. And as a result, the fairways are a lot wider in America than they are in Europe, for example. Hence, you saw how much the American team struggled 2 years ago when they came to play a narrow course to the French for Paris National during the Ryder Cup. So the fairways are a lot wider. And secondly, you know, the rough is not as heavy as it would be on European courses. So the course setup could be something to mitigate it. And then unfortunately, the PGA Tour in America, they play in such ideal conditions. You saw the weather conditions the last 4 weeks. Mm. You know, even when the rain comes, it just makes the golf course even easier, because long and soft is exactly what they like. They water the golf courses heavily, so the ball's stopping very quickly when it hits the deck, which is exactly what they want, because they hit it so far. So if you got bouncy conditions, that would make it a little bit tougher. If you had a heavier rough, that would make it a bit tougher. And then if you had the inclement weather conditions that we have, certainly in Europe, in terms of, you know, wind and stuff like that, that would make it a lot tougher. So that challenge is coming, Joe. Let's not jump to conclusions too much about DeChambeau. His best finish ever in his 15th in a major championship, as many PGA Tour events as he's won. He hasn't excelled in the majors yet. Mm. There's a big one coming in Harding Park, another golf course that I played that I know very well. It's a really tough, old-fashioned golf course. I know the rough is up there from some people in San Francisco I've been talking to who've been playing it. And it's normally winded air, so it's quite close to the sea. So that's going the real acid test for the DeChambeau. And I'm really, really intrigued to see how he navigates his way through that.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, I should have mentioned, so he's averaging 320 at the moment. He was hitting a 300 in 2018. So it's 20 extra yards. It's not like it's a complete, an utter transformation. One thing to touch
on. Just to remember, it's 320 in the air. So a lot of golf courses that he plays are dog legs. So he's taking it across those log legs. So instead of getting 20 yards further, sometimes he's getting 50 because he's able to eat off more of the dog leg.
That's a fair point. Yeah, for sure. And he averaged 350 this week. So maybe when you know, the conditions suit, who knows? He says in practice he can get the thing, you know, close to 400, which is just
funny. He nearly did it last week. Yeah. I mean, he was averaging on par fours, Joe. His second shot averaged 100 yards.
Yeah,
I mean, think about it. And even these 465-yard par fours, he was still only hitting a 100-yard shot in.
Yeah, and you know when he dials in his irons, because he missed a couple of greens. I mean, he could be deadly. So that's all coming just on him as a person. Because I know time's against me. Sorry to rush this on. I mean, over the weekend he was called an insufferable gobshite. There was a big piece on him. I saw on
good Irish term that one.
Yeah. Eamon Lynch, I think, behind that one. And even I saw on Fox Sports they called him golf's freak. You know, like they're trying to build him into like the Hulk and stuff. But he can create his own mess as well. Like last year when he was criticised for slow play, he turned around and blamed the caddies for walking slowly. And I'm mixed on him. I think a lot of people are. At times he's incredibly charming and interesting to listen to, and I want to like him. But maybe he's frayed after 4 weeks on the road. But on Saturday, he got caught up with a cameraman. Effectively, he had hit a bad shot in the bunker, had a Sergio-esque slap then with the club at the bunker and walked to the next tee. And he felt that the cameraman was filming him for too long after the shot. You know, he felt, give me a break here. And he got into a tete-a-tete with the cameraman. And then here he is. I've got the clip here on Saturday. This is after his round. He's had 2-3 hours to think about this thing, but he doubled down. Have a listen here.
So there was something that happened. I mean, nothing crazy, but I had a cameraman that was filming me after I had a bad bunker shot and whiffed the sand a little bit, which shouldn't have done. That was dumb. But at the end of the day, you know, he was literally watching me the whole entire way up. You know, after getting out of the bunker, walking up next to the green, and I just was like, sir, what is the need to watch me that long? I mean, I understand that, but it's his job to, you know, video me. But at the same point, I think we need to start protecting our players out here compared to showing, you know, a potential vulnerability and hurting someone's image. I just don't think that's necessarily the right thing to do. Not like I was going to do anything bad. It's one of those things that I hope he respects, you know, my privacy as much as we're out here performing. I think it's necessary that we have our times of privacy as well when things aren't going our way. I mean, you know, we're in the spotlight, and if somebody else is in the spotlight, they wouldn't want that either. You know, it's just something about respect, I think, that's necessary on that end. You know, so for me, I feel like it's one of those things that, you know, we had a conversation and it was all good after that.
Can you explain what you mean by protecting the players?
Oh, well, you know, look, I feel like when you're videoing someone and you know, you catch Tiger at a bad time, you show him accidentally doing something or someone else, or, you know, they're just frustrated because they really care about the game. It can really hurt them if they catch you at a potentially vulnerable time. Or I'm not necessarily, we're not, we don't mean anything by it. We just care a lot about the game. And for that to damage our brand, like that's not cool in the way we act. Because if you actually meet me in person, you know, I'm not too bad of a dude, I don't think. You know, so that's the thing I hope we can, you know, get to the point where everybody understands that we just care a lot about the game. We want to do well. We are passionate about what we do. And, you know, we want everybody to enjoy the entertainment. We don't want negative stuff coming down.
So, I mean, I think bemusing is about the best way you could sum that up. It's strange. No one's perfect. Look, who knows? I'm sure he's under pressure. But that's just a bizarre logic.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're in the spotlight, as I said earlier. You're in the entertainment business and a PGA Tour and You know, they're going to look for entertainment, and sometimes that's a player cursing or some slamming the club or, you know, throwing a bit of a temper, a tantrum. I mean, that's all part and parcel of being a professional golfer. And sometimes it gets the better of all of us. We've all made those kind of mistakes that we get embarrassed about. And I think in time he'll look back in that interview and his reflections on what he said last week and what he said about the cameraman has been, you know what, yeah, I was out of order here. You know, I'm in the spotlight. I've got to take the rough with the smooth, and that's the way it is. And I can validate, though, that he's actually a very nice guy. I like him, Joe. I must say, I've spent a bit of time in his company. Nice. I found him incredibly mannerable, very respectful, great conversationalist, lots of chat. You know, other players, they're not exactly what they look on TV with the smiling and the happy faces and everything wonderful. And then off the golf course, there's a different thing that they're fakeness that they're hiding. And that's not the case with him. And I like him for that. And he is making some mistakes, and he is making some publicity mistakes, like these kind of things. But I think, I've given the benefit of doubt here, and I've put it down to a little bit of immaturity. And also, I also kind of like the fact that he's got fire in his belly the way he does there. That's important. All the great players have got a bit of fire in their belly, and that's what he certainly has.
Well, that's good to hear, actually, because I sort of want to give him the benefit of the doubt, because when he's in decent form and he's open and he's engaging, I find him incredibly likable. And then he lets himself down in these heated moments, and he's probably got a bit of stick coming his way now. Like, he's, if there's a spectrum there, and Patrick Reed's all the way over here, he's kind of, you know, he's inching towards that side. And it's interesting to hear you find him good company, and maybe he's getting a touch of a raw deal here.
Well, I don't know about a raw deal. I think, the media are quite right to kind of give him a slap, give him a slap in the wrist there, because that is kind of behavior of a bit of a spoiled brat. But, you know what? He'll learn from that, and he'll move on. I mean, look, they've all done it. I mean, telling me Tiger wasn't perfect, and now everybody sees him as an absolute hero with the perfect guy and the perfect everything. And look at all the stuff that went on in his life. And, you know, Bubba Watson was another guy who came in for a lot of criticism. And, you know, as they mature, they get on and they realize what is going on, I think Bryce will be no different.
Very last point, and it's a self-explanatory one, but if DeChambeau has the success he's threatening to have here, then every 17, 18-year-old going into a college program is suddenly going to be hitting the gym big time. PGA Tour are going to have to up their testing program, by the way. Like, this is going to change the golfer we're going to see over the next 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think radically, it's going to change it quite radically. And there's already players talking about doing it, Joe. And it is certainly something. You know, drug testing in golf, absolutely, it is there. We are an Olympic sport. I know it's quite rigid over here in Europe. I can't speak for the PGA Tour. But I know we're very much all over it on the European Tour. And I think every sport, you're negligent if you're not on top of it in the modern day and age. But having said that, you know, he's a guy that's quite clearly put on a whole lot of muscle, and he's got a different approach to the game. And, you know, I think it's good to watch where he's going to go and how far he's come and how far he will go. And I'd be really surprised. I'm not being naive here, but I'd be really, really surprised if there was anything sinister going on with Bryce. And I think it is just pure this professor kind of genius kind of a guy taking things to a new level. I mean, as I say, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, Joe, if somebody said to you, oh, there's going to be a guy coming onto the PGA Tour and he's going to use all his shafts, are going to be the same length, his wedge is going to be the same length as his forearm, and he's going to be really successful and he's going to be a top 10 player in the world, you would have said, absolutely no chance. All the great players have gone through, none of them even dared try that. Mm. All the technicians were saying it's a crazy thing to do. And look what he did before he even tried putting on the bulk and that. So he's doing it again. And as I say, he's creating some new narratives and comment in the game. And I think that's got to be good for golf.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to watch. Listen, thanks so much for your time. It's much appreciated. Paul McGinley. Thanks, Paul.
You're welcome. Thanks, Joe.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.